Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass.
This is my
Toronto FC,
this is
Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew,
FC Dallas,
New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Hey, welcome to Pitch Pass. My name is Roach, and I'm a huge Netherlands fan, and we're recording this on a Wednesday night, just moments after the Netherlands have lost to Argentina in penalty kicks, thus dispatching them from the World Cup. So, sorry about my tone. At Pitch Pass, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, pitchpass.com, if you want to get any more information on the show. We've had Bobby Boswell on throughout the World Cup. We're going to try to get him on a little later on. In his place, though, we've got Garth Lagerwey, general manager of Real Salt Lake. Yes, we bring in the heavy hitters for our World Cup analysts. ESPN's got nothing on us. And NBC's Sports Network's Kyle Martino is going to join us a little bit later on. We'll talk a little bit World Cup with him, but mostly we're going to have him on just so we get ourselves reacclimated to MLS. He will break everything else down for us, second half storylines and such. We'll do that later. But first, as I said, the Real Salt Lake general manager, Garth Lagerwey, joins us right now. Garth, hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, Roach. Good. How are you?
I got to be honest with you. Usually, you know me. We go way back. I'm usually fully prepped and ready to go, but I've spent the last 3 hours watching this match, so it's like... Also, I was rooting for the Netherlands, so there's... I ask you to be gentle with me, that's all.
No, I was saying my great-grandparents came to this country from Holland, so I had all my nephews and their Holland jerseys watching the game and my sons, and so tough loss for the Dutch.
All right, so, and by the way, you are filling in for Bobby Boswell. He's been our World Cup analyst throughout the entire run, not available, traveling, doing whatever he's doing. You're the fill-in, so you've got to bring the World Cup analysis as keen as Bobby Boswell does.
That's a high bar. Bobby's a good man and a funny man. So it's doubly difficult.
And a keen analysis, an analyst of the game as well. So
absolutely.
Let me ask you this. Let's do we want to start with your team or do you want to start with World Cup talk?
Let's do World Cup, right? We're just coming out of that. It's what the whole world's talking about. I got to think that's what DC's a buzz with. And, you know, this is the best tournament of our lifetime.
Totally agree.
Although that was one of the worst games I've ever seen. it was certainly tense. There was certainly everything on the line.
Let me ask you, as a guy who was rooting for the Netherlands, have been pulling for the Netherlands the entire time, you know, I got a little sensitive when I'm reading all the comments about how bad the game was. And of course, I'm going to pull out everybody who says, well, it was a chess match between two tacticians going. Why was the match bad in your opinion?
I think it just kind of devolved into a stalemate. I mean, neither team was willing to take a ton of risk. Both teams wanted to keep the ball, and there was a lot of effort exerted as soon as the ball turned over to try to win it back, and it just never opened up. I mean, it was the classic game that needed a goal, and I think if you would have had one, but I mean, you didn't even get a chance. I mean, you got a number of half chances both ways. You had a clear header from Argentina late for Palacio, and he had a couple of crosses here and there from both sides, and you had a shot from Robin that got blocked by another Dutch player. You know, but it was all, I can't think of a 100% chance either way, which over 2 hours is astonishing. It just very rarely happens that way. And, you know, even just, you know, the number of battles in the midfield, I mean, the ball didn't get into dangerous areas even very often. So I just think it was two teams that played cautiously, that were very well coached, and weren't going to give an inch. And I definitely heard some of my Argentine friends say before the game, you know, that they thought the Netherlands was a more difficult matchup for them than Germany. And so that was, they were going to react cautiously to that because they didn't want to make a mistake and let some of the speed guys from the Netherlands, Robin in particular, get behind them and hurt them. And they felt like if they could prevent that, then they matched up actually much better with Germany in the final.
Well, and the only thing I will say, look, I'm not going to try to tell you that the match was awesome. I mean, it wasn't. There wasn't end-to-end action. It wasn't one of those nil-nil draws where you're like, oh, well, that's great. What I will say, though, is Mascherano did a fantastic job of marking Robin out of the match for the most part. Nigel de Jong, when he was in, did a good job of neutralizing Messi. And then Ron Vlaar had a fantastic game as well. So, I mean, I just don't want to say that, look, the game was boring because these guys didn't do X. I thought defensively the teams played well. And then you had a Robin Van Persie who obviously isn't 100%. That wasn't going to happen. And then as soon as Kuhn comes in, he's not 100%. So, you know, I guess it was one of those matches that was set up to not be as good as we thought we would, especially when those teams played as well defensively as they did.
Yeah, you know, but that said, I mean, a lot of those guys you listed, those guys can be difference makers. Schneider can be a difference maker. Robin had been arguably the best player in the tournament, you know, up till now. And he just, you know, there were still plays where he skinned two or three guys, but just couldn't break free. And just, you know, once or twice you wanted them to shoot just a one touch earlier or cross one touch earlier. You know, and there's the block by, I think it was by Mascherano, you know, that literally is going in to the far post over the Dutch goalkeeper. That's right at the end of the first half, but is blocked at the last second. You know, so there was just those none of those moments were kind of clearly materialized, and certainly Argentina hurt by the loss of Di Maria, and from a creativity perspective, and you know, to your point too, I think one of the things that people don't talk about is this was the, I believe, the fifth game for both teams, if I'm counting correctly. Round of 16, round of quarterfinal. It's actually the sixth game for both teams. And I do think fatigue played a little bit of a factor. I mean, with the idea that this is going to be a very close game, do we have to save something for overtime? And, you know, you've probably read some of this, the discussion from the FIFA Technical Committee suggesting that a fourth sub would be helpful. And I think it would be a really good idea. I think it would help the game, because right now coaches are forced to save that third sub in case somebody cramps up in overtime, particularly that in that fifth or sixth game of the tournament. And it really makes, again, both, you know, the purpose of overtime is to try to have an open game for a smaller period of time to hopefully get a goal and have a winner. And in fact, as you saw in this overtime, both teams sat back because nobody was willing to take a risk. Nobody was willing to, you know, to make that one mistake that might cost them the game.
Great point. Let me ask you, you know, we saw two Argentines with head injuries during the match. We heard Taylor Twellman's comments at halftime. They were very, very strong, very heated, very warranted, if you ask me. Is there a protocol in play that MLS uses that is different than FIFA uses? Or is there a FIFA protocol that MLS uses that they decide to just disregard in the World Cup?
MLS has very, very stringent protocols. I believe they are put in place by, if they're not the same as the NFL's, they are put in place by the same people that develop the NFL's program. And it's, you know, the stuff that happened in the World Cup, both with the Uruguayan player and the Argentine player, simply wouldn't happen. I certainly would like to think it wouldn't happen. You know, there are 7-step protocols that have to be followed in evaluating a player. You know, a player does not need to black out to have a concussion. It's something that we take very, very seriously, and in fact have, you know, a legal obligation to take seriously. So, you know, it's something that I think there's just more awareness of in the U.S. because of the NFL, and I think in the rest of the world, you know, we saw a Uruguayan player go back in, an Argentine player go back in. I do think that FIFA will be forced into a more healthy discussion about this topic, because nobody wants careers shortened or ended by you know, the action in a game, no matter how important that game.
The interesting thing is that MLS obviously is a FIFA sanctioned league, so, you know, and I'm sure you probably don't know this. This is a different level than the one you kind of circulate in, but you would think that FIFA would have to okay MLS regulations for them to implement it in the league. So it's not like they could be unaware of a certain protocol that could be used. There is a sanctioned league that they oversee that has that protocol.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot. It's a federalist system, you know, similar to the federal government has federal laws and state governments have state laws. And the federal government is only going to make a decision on a state law if it comes to a federal court and moves to a high enough level. You know, obviously the Hobby Lobby cases are examples of that recently in the courts. But
Garth, are you going civics on me right now? Are you giving me a civics lesson as we speak?
Stop and listen, DC. This is your audience, folks. This is the educated young people with disposable income. I bet you 20% of your audience is probably lawyers like me. So, I mean, I'm speaking to my people.
All right, fair enough.
But no, without getting too nerdy, you know, I think that it's something where FIFA doesn't have to have an opinion, often they won't. And so if it's not an issue that's brought up to them or forces a confrontation of some kind, as long as it doesn't directly conflict with their regulations, and you know, as we see, again, at the state level and a lot of laws, states choose to go further than the national government might. And I think state, in our case, the U.S. Federation chooses and MLS chooses to go further than FIFA might choose to on a global scale.
Taking my love of the Netherlands out, if Brazil wasn't going to make the final, this kind of are these are the two teams you would want in the final. Maybe if Spain were making a run to repeat, that would be a storyline. But you've got the team that is firing all cylinders on one side of the pitch, the other side of the pitch, only the best player in the world looking to solidify his legacy. That's a nice narrative as we go into Sunday.
You got Europe against South America.
And that
you
too.
You have the two best teams in the tournament. I mean, this is the dream final in a lot of ways. I mean, I think you have the cultural differences, the stylistic differences. You have multiple stars. You have the best player in the world. I don't know. I mean, I think literally the best tournament of my lifetime, of your lifetime, has produced, you know, what will hopefully be a good final. But it's certainly the fairest matchup in terms of the two best teams having arrived there.
Well, I let me ask you, explain that comment. You say the two best teams. I look at what Argentina's done, and I think to myself, well, if not for three or four moments of brilliance from Messi, this team's not even here. So back up your rationale that Argentina is justified as one of the two best teams.
I would, you know, again, I'm a Dutch fan, as I said, but, I mean, without a couple moments from Robin, you'd say the same thing about the Dutch team. You know, if Schneider doesn't hit, Schneider does absolutely nothing for 85 minutes and then smashes in a rebound to tie Mexico. I mean, they're going out in the round of 16. So, you know, I think in a tournament like this, I think the other thing you saw in this tournament is that there's a lot of leveling. I mean, if you're a top 20 team in the world, you can take on and you can be competitive with just about any other team. Now, Germany may, you know, win, or the absolute top teams may win a little bit more often than not. But anybody in that pack, anybody from CONCACAF, can compete with anybody else in the world. We saw it with the U.S. against Belgium. We saw it with Mexico. We saw it with Costa Rica going all the way to the quarterfinals, taking the Dutch to penalties. So, you know, I think one of the big takeaways I have from this tournament is that we have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe in our league. We have to believe in our players, because our players are pretty good. And again, we know, we measure ourselves all the time against Mexico and Costa Rica. And you had three CONCACAF teams in the round of 16. You had one in the quarterfinals. And you had, you know, those teams, particularly Mexico, try to play, not just sit back and defend for 90 minutes. And I really think that that's the course of America for the future. I think we are, by mentality, an attacking nation. And as we begin to produce more and better attacking players, I hope we go to that more, you know, that little bit of a style. Like, we survived. We got a group of deaths. That's a great accomplishment. But I don't believe we're 30 shots worse than Belgium. I believe if we can keep the ball in midfield and make some of the right personnel choices in there, you can generate a lot more with the ball and generate some attacking chances and be competitive with most of the teams on the planet.
You know, I want to ask you a couple of things about Brazil-Germany, but, you know, you brought up CONCACAF, you brought up the U.S. Are we past the point now where I need to ask you the question of, is this the tournament that CONCACAF now gets their respect from the South American and the European countries? Does it matter if we get that respect if we just go out and continue to handle our business in these tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I feel like this is underappreciated, but home field advantage makes so much difference. I mean, if you look at, you know, a tournament like this played in our hemisphere, it does give the CONCACAF teams an advantage from a climate standpoint, from a time standpoint, from you're used to massive amounts of travel when you're playing in CONCACAF, just as you have in Brazil. So, you know, and in Russia, again, Russia combines a lot of different things. It's a much different climate, much different time zones, but probably a lot of travel again. So, you know, maybe there's a blend of something. But I honestly think, yes, CONCACAF teams will get more respect. I think some of that is coincidental. But I also think CONCACAF is consistently underrated, I think our league is. And so will we get respect? I don't put a lot of stock in that. I think that you know, you just got to keep going out and beating big teams. And specifically, if you really want to get to the heart of it, you have to go out and beat European teams because they still have the majority of the political power than FIFA. And if you go out and you beat European teams over and over and over again, that's how you're going to win respect over time. Now, should we get more respect in Asia or Africa in terms of confederations that we outperformed in this tournament? Yeah. You know, maybe we go from instead of 3.5 spots to 4 spots, or from 4 spots to 4.5 spots. I think that would be in order in this tournament, but I also think that's the kind of thing that's just going to be tweaked after every tournament one way or the other.
Yeah, and I guess the patience is the key word, because, you know, for the UEFA nations, they're not going to think about CONCACAF teams until for another 4 years. So you can't just, I guess one tournament isn't going to turn it around. It takes a number of tournaments like these to really establish, okay, you got to take us seriously. You've got to give us the respect that we deserve.
Yeah, and look, I mean, every European is going to say is, yeah, Costa Rica beat Greece, and they only beat them in penalties. And it was, you know, so it was the worst European team to advance, and the CONCACAF team only beat them in penalties, and Mexico and the U.S. both lost. So basically, you got to go to the next level, and you got to win. You know, Mexico's gone out five times in a row in the knockout round. The U.S. has gone out on that round three out of four times, and the one time we got through, we beat a CONCACAF team. So in Mexico, so. That's really what it comes down to is you know, we have moved up a notch. You know, I think the expectation now is that CONCACAF teams can make the knockout round in a World Cup. But the next step now is, can we win a match? Can we go on? Do we have the ability to potentially go on a run? And I think if you talk about how do we win respect, that's when you actually get respected. When you can hold your hand up and say, I'm legitimately one of the top 10 teams in the world, and there can be no debate about that because we are regularly getting to the knockout round and we're advancing.
So I wanted to ask you about Brazil, Germany, but I want to ask you from the perspective of your job. You're the general manager of an MLS club. If you are Brazil or the Brazilian Federation, that's a macro level of, okay, what do we do behind the scenes so that the next time we take the pitch in a meaningful competition, we've got the right coach who has deployed the right tactics, who with the right players. As the GM of a team, you deal with that on a micro level in relation to the Brazilian Federation. So what is the first step of the Brazilian Federation to change the culture of the team if it needs it?
You know, I think at the end of the day, I think you saw here home field advantage in reverse, if that's possible. You know, when you see the Brazilian players crying at every national anthem, and certainly, you know, those are big moving moments with, you know, shared with everyone in your country, and it's not to diminish that, but you know, just the reactions in having won in penalties against Chile, you know, it was such an emotional group, and I think some of it's got to be. Is it simply in the nation that arguably is the biggest soccer-loving nation in the world, is it just really, really hard to play this tournament in that environment? Is it impossible to separate the soccer from life and culture? It just seemed like they were, you know, when you watch, I mean, that is a team full of world-class players, and they absolutely melted mentally after a second goal. I mean, that game was competitive for no more than 20 minutes, and that just never happens at that level. And, you know, they simply withered from the moment. And I have to think that no matter how well prepared, that had much more to do with the emotion of the game and then the preparation for that game. So when you say, what does Brazil need to do to fix it? Look, technically, do they produce attackers at a level that they have historically? Certainly they have Neymar, you know, arguably one of the best strikers in the world, but they don't have anything after that. And Joe is a real promising, in particular, is a real promising youth player, either isn't ready yet or hasn't blossomed yet. But they need to produce more of these type of attacking players, I mean, as compared to the Brazil teams of old. But beyond that, I mean, this is a team that's 1 year removed from winning the Confederations Cup. It's at worst the fifth best team in the world. So, you know, I think that nothing's wrong with Brazil. They're going to be fine. They still produce tons of players, certainly if you're looking at it from a GM's perspective. I think that structurally there's not a lot to fix. It's just how do we prepare our players for these bigger moments? And I think a lot of it gets better for them when they're not playing at home.
That's a fascinating answer because when I look at the results, I mean, it was astonishing. And so thinking about talking to you, some of the things that come into my head is, okay, is the Brazilian mystique gone? Will they be able to command high fees to play friendlies in England against Sweden just because they want them on the continent for a little while? But basically, from what you're saying, is the best thing the Brazilian Federation can do right now, take a deep breath, let things settle down, and move forward from there. But just like you guys did when you had your coaching change, it doesn't mean everything. The philosophy, the culture has to change.
Agree. And look, might you see a changing of the guard? Yeah, I mean, you got, you know, the goalkeeper, Julio Cesar, is an older player. Scolari is an older coach. The technical director, who's I'm brain farting and not drawing his name right now, but was at one point coach of the Metro Stars, nonetheless, is a massively accomplished, you know, person. And I wonder if maybe you see a little bit of the changing of the guard there. But I think, again, structurally, they're developing good players, and they're developing a large number of good players, and I think they're going to be fine.
Well, and I think I know what your answer is going to be as a general manager, but obviously Scolari is out. Is the hire of the coach the most important next step, or is it the hiring of the technical director?
I guess the first thing, it depends on, you know, do you, I don't think it's automatic that Pereira would leave. I think it's likely that he would choose to leave, in part just because he's done so much in his career. I think there's, you know, winning a World Cup at home, I think, was the ultimate dream for both of those guys, Scolari and Pereira. And, you know, I'm not sure winning a World Cup in Russia, you know, carries the same weight or is worth the same amount of stress and anguish to them. So, you know, what I'm interested in more, I would say, is that I think that they have the right structure. I think this idea of a technical director separate and apart from a head coach, I think it provides a balance to decision making, which I think is really important in any federation. I think that's the right structure. Obviously, easy for me to say that's how we are set up here at RSL. But I know that we felt like we've had a lot of success. And a big part of our success is that decision making is of necessity shared when you have those structures. You have a GM, you have a head coach, you have a strategic long-term person, you have a short-term, we need to win this weekend person, and you absolutely have to have both viewpoints, and you weigh those, and when you make decisions collectively, oftentimes they're very thoroughly vetted because they're evaluated from those different perspectives, and then maybe you don't do things like leave Landon Donovan off the World Cup team.
Whoa, okay. Well, wow, somebody just made a controversial statement.
It was not a reasonable conclusion to leave the best American player ever out of the team, and the idea that he couldn't have helped the team, I don't find to be a rational conclusion.
Would you be surprised if he features in a national team setup again?
He will not, as long as Jurgen Klinsmann is a coach.
So you will be surprised?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't understand Jurgen's under contract for 4 more years.
And that's the inference, of course.
Yeah, and if he stays, I do think Jurgen will have opportunities. I mean, Jurgen did a good job. He got us out of the group of death, and he made some difficult choices. And, you know, obviously I can be critical of the one choice, but easy for me to say to cherry pick that one choice out of the many that he made. And ultimately he was a success, and I think that he'll have other opportunities. And we'll see if he wants to stay for the next 4 years or not.
You brought the lens back to the States, which I'm glad, because I do want to ask you a couple of questions about your team. First, though, and I'm not asking you to speculate on players on other teams. That's not the question. But you look at a situation that DeAndre Yedlin is in right now. Taking out the player point of view, from a GM point of view, how difficult is that? You've lost a key member of your team for a month. You were planning on that. Turns out he has a much bigger tournament than you were expecting. And I'm sure now as a GM, your phone is ringing off the hook. How difficult of a decision or a few weeks is that when we know that there's a time crunch that these other teams want to bring in new players? We have a win transfer window that's only open for a short amount of time. What's the stress level like of a GM in that situation?
You know, I think maybe less than you know, maybe you think. I mean, I think if you get offers and you get something that you simply can't refuse, then that is what it is. But, you know, in our case, let's compare Kyle Beckerman to, say, DeAndre Yedlin.
Well, I was thinking Lewis Gill, because if he next summer he goes away, he has a great tournament, you could be in the same situation.
Absolutely. But we weren't. So, I mean, that stage eclipses all others by a mile.
True.
And so if you are not on that stage, I really don't think people are looking at you right now. Now, again, from my RSL GM hat,
yeah,
I would tell you that the World Cup inflates prices of everybody on that stage, and so you literally don't want anyone from that stage. But as a practical matter, the conventional wisdom is everybody watches all the games, and so everybody sees all the players, and it drives up those players' values. And certainly the first half of the transfer window is going to be everybody buying World Cup players. And I can tell you that strategically, we will sit that process out. But again, I think if you have money to spend and you don't have a salary cap, it can be very tempting, because it's a very easy way to appease a fan base to go out and spend some money on a player that everyone, all of your fans, have just seen is really good. That's the kind of thing that keeps GMs employed.
Do you ballpark a number, though, in your head and say to yourself, if somebody calls and gets in the neighborhood of that number, we'll listen. If not, no thank you, we're fine with what we got.
Yes, but I go further, because we're in the middle of our season.
True.
We believe we have a championship level team. You know, we've made the playoffs 6 years in a row. We made the final last year, made the Open Cup final, lost to a distinguished DC United team there. the first place in the East right now,
yes.
DC United. And, you know, so we're going to be loath to break our team up, you know, and if you read the fine print of the Yedlin conversations that Seattle's having, they're saying, hey, we're willing to sell Yedlin, but we're willing to sell him after the season. So yeah. It's got to be the right price. It's got to be the right time, you know, and I think we have to respect ourselves again and believe in our players enough to believe that the offers will still be there, that our players aren't all of a sudden going to stink because we sell them 6 months from now, or that the world is going to lose interest because MLS isn't good enough as a league. We have to value ourselves before we will be taken seriously on the world stage.
I'll probe. Have you gotten any calls for Kyle Beckerman? I mean, and the reason I didn't think that he was a perfect example is just because of the age difference between Yedlin and Beckerman.
Yeah, no, and that's right. I mean, Kyle's 32 years old, and that is going to limit the pool of teams that come for him. I do think that Kyle had an outstanding tournament. And I think that he is, you know, one of the most valuable players to ever put on an RSL jersey, and I hope he finishes his career with us. And we have zero intention of selling Kyle. And you know, so you asked originally, hey, is there a number? I don't know if for Kyle there is a number. You know, obviously, if Kyle comes to us and says, I hate it here, I want to leave, that's a different story. But you know, to the contrary, he's been our captain for 6 years. I think our success kind of begins and ends with Kyle on some level. And he's certainly a guy that, again, if we value ourselves and the culture we've created and the bond and the package we've made with our fans, I think is a guy that we want in a perfect world to retire in an RSL jersey.
So I know you're going to PC answer me here, and it's going to be, well, we have the depth, and we knew we had the depth, and we're now relying on our depth, and that's fine and dandy. But the way that you guys started off without Saborio, without Beckerman, without Raimondo for this last month, the way that it ended up and where you are now, sitting in second place in the Western Conference, you have to be looking back going, okay, we had a rocky waters. We got a couple of our guys back. Two of our main guys were waiting on our third guy. We're happy with the way it turned out and where we're sitting after it's all in our rearview mirror now.
You know, I don't think you can make a definitive statement one way or the other. I mean, we have to continue to improve. I mean, the goal of every team is, you know, to get out fast. We did that. We knew we'd struggle a little bit without our guys. We played one game with them back, so I wouldn't call that a representative sample size, particularly a game in which we got two penalty kicks, which, you know, suffice to say, doesn't happen very often. So, you know, I think we have a lot to prove, and I think we have to reintegrate our young players with Kyle and Nick in particular. We need to have some of our younger forwards step up. I think Plata's had a very good season, you know, but Finley, Sandoval, Garcia, the three others that we're going to call upon, none of them have scored a goal yet, and obviously that's something that's got to change. We have gotten good production for our midfield, but again, I think there's some ability for some players to step up there as well and score some goals. So we have to account for Saborio's absence, but hopefully only for a period of 2 to 3 months now. And it's not going to be one player scoring the goals that Sabo scored. It's going to be a collection of players. And I think if you have one player out, oftentimes you can overcome that. I think what we found is when we had three players out, we had a number of injuries. We were playing games literally down six and seven starters. And then the truth is that your product isn't really RSL at some point. It's the RSL reserve team. And, you know, there are a lot of young guys in our team that we think have a lot of talent. But most young players play better when they have some veterans on the field with them. And certainly that was our experience over the last month or so.
Give me one guy on your team that you look back on over the last month and thought to yourself, you know what, that young guy, he stepped up. That's somebody that we're going to be able to do business with down the road.
You know, Jeff Antonella, I think, had a good summer for us. And you know, with Nick coming back from the World Cup, you know, one of the interesting things is Nick's 34 years old. When he's with us, if he needs a day off, we give him a day off. And we let him rest, and we understand he's a little bit older player. At the World Cup, he was a third goalkeeper. And that means that any time somebody needed extra work, he was the guy staying. He was the guy putting in the extra work. And so, you know, the conventional wisdom, the popular wisdom is, oh, well, Nick must be really well rested. He hasn't played in 6 weeks. You know, I would say we need to be careful with Nick. And make sure we give him enough rest and an opportunity to bounce back, because I think he's been through a little bit of a grind over the course of the World Cup in very similar way to Kyle, where, you know, Kyle was playing every couple of days. Certainly the pre-World Cup camp was grueling for both of those guys, and I think with in terms of managing their reentry to the team, we have to be mindful of how they're going to play in September and October as much as how they're going to play in July.
You know, it's a fascinating and interesting point about how much Nick has worked during that month in Brazil. And I was thinking to myself, well, how would Garth know that? But then I remembered Garth is very schooled in the ways of the backup keeper.
certainly it's one I'm familiar with, and you know, for that reason too, was proud of how Jeff Antonella played for us in Nick's absence, and you know, is a guy who, you know, statistically the numbers didn't really bear it out. We only won one of the games that Jeff started, but you know, felt like he was very close to doing a lot of things better, and that is the frustration of a backup goalkeeper right there. Yep. Is you know, you want to push forward, you want to assert your role within the team, and the only way that happens is when you win games, and it's just not easy to win games.
Garth, you were your analysis was so much better than Boswell's, and your sense of humor
I'm sure that's not true
was almost as good as Bobby's. So you were a great fill-in, and I thank you for doing it, and I appreciate it, my friend.
No problem. Anytime.
Take it easy.
All right. Good luck with the stadium out there.
Hey, Garth, before I let you go, is your contract up at the end of the year?
I am out of contract at the end of this year.
Just asking the question. That's all. We could have a new stadium here soon. But you know what, Garth? Good talking to you, and we'll catch up with you a little later.
All right. Sounds good, Roach.
See you, man.
Thanks for having me.
What? I'm just asking questions. The guy loves D.C. The guy's wife is from D.C. I was just speculating, talking out loud, if you will. Don't fret, RSL fans. I'm sure that Garth will stay and continue the dominance that your club has enjoyed, just like Jason Christ did. I'm kidding, RSL fans. Jeez. Let's move on, shall we? NBC Sports Network's Kyle Martino has been watching the World Cup along with the rest of the country. Curious to hear his thoughts on the broadcast, on the matches, and of course, as we get back into MLS season, his thoughts on second half storylines. We bring him in right now. Kyle, how are you, sir?
Hey, what's up, man?
Well, first, Kyle, it's been fun because, you know, the U.S. national team has come back. It's been interesting to see, you know, the heightened level of publicity they've received. And then amongst that, you even see the guys hanging out, getting a little bottle service at L.A. clubs. And in the middle of all that, I see some selfies from Mr. Kyle Martino. What's up, man?
That was like bringing the old clubs out of the closet and seeing if you still had the swing, and I definitely do not still have the swing. It was the first time I had graced those Hollywood streets in a very long time. I've got a baby coming in a month, and when we hit about the midnight line, I was looking for a place to lie my head down and go to sleep. I'm not nearly as cool as I thought I used to be.
Well, and you know, if you do have a child coming in a month, this could be your last hurrah out there.
It was. I mean, that was one of the reasons that the guys convinced me to come out and also to celebrate a terrific World Cup for Timmy, a good friend of mine, and loved that I got the chance to play with him during my short career with the U.S. team, and was at home with a U.S. jersey on, and so pumped for him. And he is rock star status right now, deservedly, because he came up with a Herculean legendary World Cup performance that, if it's the last one we ever see in Tim Howard, from Tim Howard in a World Cup, that is one way to go out.
I don't really care about the off-the-record stuff. Obviously, that's between former teammates and friends. But what was the reaction from the public seeing these guys out and about in Los Angeles?
I felt like we were in Backstreet Boys, and I was the Backstreet Boy that no one knew. And they didn't tell me to get out of the picture just because they didn't want me to feel bad. No, I mean, the guy was – it was like – there was plenty of people tiptoeing around Hollywood who are on the A-list and celebrities that people are looking for, and all of them were walking by as bulbs were flashing for Tim Howard.
And what I will ask you, though, is what was his reaction to the increased publicity, the Twitter campaign, the conversations?
Tim's a cool customer. He's as cool as he's ever been. So he took it in stride, and it was just all of that was just kind of fun, and we all had fun with it. But it was just a night with friends, and it wasn't Tim didn't make a big deal of it, and we didn't talk about it at all.
Was there any conversation between you guys of, wow, look how far we've come? And for people who, and I'm sure anybody listening to Pitch Pass would know, you're a contemporary of the guys that you were hanging out with. So, you know, you were there in the early 2000s when nobody would have cared that you were at a club in Los Angeles. Was there a couple of chuckles of, hey, look how far we've come. Look where soccer is now.
No, not really. I mean, we were just sort of laughing at how ridiculous people behave sometimes when celebrities are walking around, and Tim Howard is one. But that conversation was about a minute and 30 seconds long, and then it was just rehashing all of the good old times and talking about babies and living in England and the difference between England and L.A. and us trying to twist Timmy's arm to get him to L.A. here eventually. But, you know, we were all just having a blast with it. And this has been something that didn't happen overnight. I mean, there has been plenty of moments where we realized how far soccer has come, and this is just sort of moving it that extra rung up the ladder.
So let me ask you, we had Garth Lagerwey on, and we kind of did our World Cup analysis with him. We're recording the same day after the Netherlands lost to Argentina. I say Netherlands first, Kyle, because I was rooting for the Netherlands. But they lost in the PK. So I guess the only thing I will really ask you about the tournament itself is, Garth said that the two best teams have made it to the final. Do you agree with that statement?
It's funny when I first, and I hate when people do this, and it's obnoxious, so I'm going to be obnoxious right now. But when the tournament started, there's a good buddy of mine that goes to Vegas and doesn't know much about soccer, but always hits me up to give him some insight on what I think he should do once he gets there. And he said, first off, I want to make bets on winners. Who do you think can win this tournament? I said, if you're asking me to go right now off the top of my head, I think either Argentina or Germany are going to win this tournament.
Oh, come on,
I
Kyle.
I swear. By the way, in between all of that were some of the worst picks ever, and I got the guy crushed. So the fact that I picked the two teams that I thought would make it at least to the final does not overshadow the fact that I'm at the bottom of my pool with Kobe Jones and some of the other guys who are beating me and let me know in the message boards every day.
Will it be a situation where we'll have to temper our expectations being as what we saw from Germany against Brazil and kind of raise our expectations of Argentina based on what we saw against the Netherlands?
Yeah, I mean, we saw the best performance from the German national team ever, and they know that. It coincided with probably the worst performance from a Brazilian team we've ever seen. So don't expect anything like that in the final, especially when you saw how difficult this Argentina team made it for the Netherlands to break them down and how stingy and efficient they can be defensively. I mean, we're going to see probably more of a chess match, kind of like the semifinal we saw today, Germany against Argentina. I doubt, especially watching Argentina watching what Germany did to their South American partners, cousins, they're not going to open themselves up early and take the sort of risk that Brazil took early on in that game. So we're going to see a little more cards held close to the chest, a tight match, but you know, it's going to kind of come down to, and the announcer said it, I think it was John Champion that said, It's Messi against the machine, yeah. Messi versus the machine, which sounds like an amazing name for a band. I'm sure a Messi versus the machine punk band is popping up in Columbus, Ohio, as we speak.
You and I can share the profits. I'll reserve the website now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's kind of it for World Cup, because the reason I wanted you to come on is because we're starting to now make our way back into MLS. And, you know, look, I'm an MLS snob as much as the next guy, but I will say that it's a bit jarring coming off of matches where you're watching World Cup into DC United versus Toronto FC. This is our league, though, and the second half is promising to be kind of exciting. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of storylines. First, though, and I don't mean to catch you off guard because I know this news broke today. What are your thoughts on this homegrown match?
And also, what are they playing? The Portland Timbers,
Portland U23s, which is an interesting opponent,
yeah,
to choose.
It's like, I think that's kind of like having Messi versus the Machine open up for Led Zeppelin.
Thank you. You don't know
that. That's as easy as I could put it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's obviously it's great. We had a homegrown guy playing in a World Cup. I mean, you know, DeAndre Yedlin. It's obviously great to celebrate that program is unearthing terrific talent. So, it's obviously a cool thing.
I'm not sure
it's going to be much of a spectacle, but it's cool to celebrate those guys.
Had you heard any rumors of something like this happening?
No. I've been at the end of the Premier League season, and with the World Cup going on, I've been off the MLS email chain. I've been out of the loop, so I'm just plugging back in, and hadn't heard anything about what the homegrown game or what they're proposing for the.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting for my invite to the All-Star game.
To me, it feels like. You know, if it just came out of nowhere, it feels like a bit of a grab to go, okay, well, we got Yedlin. Let's get something. We put it around him. But if you're going to do something like that, why wouldn't you do it around the All-Star weekend like the NBA does with their futures game? And then you open yourself up to have all of the homegrowns in, not just the homegrowns who don't have to be playing, happen to be playing a match 2 days before, 2 days afterwards, which then leaves out your Diego Fagundes, your Bill Hamids and the like.
Yeah,
and then also get a good opponent as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's you know, I'd like to see the homegrowns against, and you know, they always bring in a big European team to play the All-Stars. Obviously, you don't want to take any steam away from that game because that's the main billing, that's the big show.
Yeah,
but there's plenty of European teams that are getting ready for their season over. In the United States, and I'm sure you can convince a lot of them to play against some youngsters in a game to get a run out.
All right. I'm reading between the lines on your answers here, and I feel like it's the same as mine of kind of a head-scratcher, and I guess we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I'm hoping for the best.
Well, thank you. That's good. Let's talk about the action on the pitch. What are some of the interesting things that you are keeping your eye on as we head into the second half of the season?
Well, I mean, one thing as we have San Jose DC United coming up is this big turnaround to DC United. I mean, it was last season was embarrassing, and they would admit it. They were all, you know, they weren't shying away from that. There was no spin. And the season before that, they were a young team with a chip on their shoulder that were making waves in the playoffs. So it's been really up and down for Ben Olsen since he's taken over DC United, and it's been a massive challenge for him. And you know, we go back and there's a friendship there, but you know, I don't have bias in that sense. More so in this is a young guy who I think has a promising future, who knows a lot about the game, who is a terrific teammate, a guy you already knew when you played with him on the field that he'd make a good coach someday. So I like to see DC United turning it around and playing well, especially leading goal scorer, and Spindola's been out and dealing with injuries and finding a way to make it work. It's kind of like, it's weird to watch the NBA when the Knicks suck. It's weird to watch MLS when DC United isn't very good. And right now, DC United are good. And tomorrow, I'm hopping a plane to San Jose, and we're going to see if they can take some of the momentum they have this season onto the road to probably one of the more difficult places, Buckshaw, to go and play against a San Jose team that's going to be looking for a win, looking for a little momentum themselves.
Yeah, and that that match is on NBC Sports Network on Friday, beginning at 11 Eastern. Are you going to take much away if United gets a result there?
Are we what? Sorry.
Are you putting a lot of stock in a United result if they happen to get one there?
Yeah, I mean, of course, anytime you go on the road, especially when you travel all the way across the country, I mean, it's difficult. There's a reason those are some of the hardest games to win, because it's taxing to get into a different time zone, to travel all the way across the country, and also, you know, play against the Goonies, play against these guys. You know, they haven't had their sort of injury time heroics and their last minute blitzes like you normally see from them. But, you know, LA Galaxy went there recently when they played at Stanford, had an incredible crowd. I think there was 50-some thousand people there, and LA Galaxy snuck out of there with a 1-0 win. And that was a huge momentum moment for the LA Galaxy that they tried to take into the next game against the Portland Timbers, and were not able to keep that momentum going. So you can't really base anything off of one road game win. But for DC United, it's about maintaining momentum that's already there, not about creating momentum that doesn't exist.
You look at the standings, and it's a bit deceiving, because the first thing that jumps out to me is, wow, LA Galaxy is sitting outside of a playoff spot. Then you look and see that they've played at minimum two, in some cases, three or four less matches than their Western Conference brethren. I will say, though, I don't get that sexiness that I usually get, to borrow Rude Hullett's term, when I watch them play these days. Is all right in Los Angeles Galaxy world, and as soon as they play these matches that they have to make up with their other teams, that they'll be where they usually are?
Well, I mean, how often do we see this with the LA Galaxy, where they underwhelm at times during the season and at the most opportune times start to click and start to find their rhythm? So I have learned not to read too much into the LA Galaxy when they struggle during the year. I mean, you know, what do they have, like 5 wins? And you know, Seattle Sounders are the only team in the Western Conference that's really creating a huge gap between themselves and the LA Galaxy. But you know, they've played 14 games. They win a couple games, and all of a sudden they're in second place. So it's very deceiving the way the schedule's popped up. And Bruce Arena is so frustrated with the scheduling because it's so difficult to get into a rhythm as a team when you have 2 and 3 weeks off at times. So, you know, they've been wanting to play more games, and now they got their wish, which is going to burn them, is they're going to play more games, but they're going to play a ton of games packed in to a tight schedule. So it's been really tough for Bruce Arena, the LA Galaxy. Obviously, their superstars are getting older, and you're seeing less consistency from them. But when it comes down to it, all the LA Galaxy need to do is get into the playoffs, and then you have that tandem of Robbie Keane and Landon Donovan up front who are going to burn you. And even in the games where Robbie Keane hasn't played all that well, he either pulls an assist or a goal out of it. And, you know, under the surface, the LA Galaxy is always threatening. It's just they've been under the surface for a lot of the season.
I would imagine outside of maybe Houston Dynamo, the most disappointing team in the league thus far has been Portland Timbers. What's going wrong with them?
You know, I mean, it's giving up early goals and their play at home. Those are the two big things. I mean, we did their game recently, and I think they've given something like 12 or 13 out of the 17 goals that they have conceded have given up the first goal. You can't constantly, and what Caleb Porter called it was, you know, Operation Comeback, you come from behind. You can't do that every game. And, you know, I think the tough part is Jeldwin, which I'm still calling it Jeldwin.
Providence Park, please.
But I'm going to get away with it. it's a place where, you know, you go and basically think there's at least a point there for the Portland Timbers. And, you know, at least a point has showed up 9 times this year, but at home, there's too many games where they haven't been able to get a win. And that needs to be their bread and butter. That needs to be where they accumulate the most points. And they need to get that fixed pretty quickly, because that typically is the foundation they build their entire season off of. The silver lining for them is they've actually been a decent road team this year. And that's because when Caleb Porter goes a little more conservative and buttons down the hatches a little bit and doesn't have as much of an attacking agenda, they don't leak as many goals. So, you know, there's been a lot of shifting across that back line. The center back pairing is a different one every weekend. So there are fixable mistakes with that team, but they have to get that home situation figured out.
We talked about the LA Galaxy and the lack of games that they have played in relation to everyone else. TFC, kind of in the same boat, only they are right now in a playoff spot and still have that 14 games while other teams have played 17, 18 games. That United loss on Saturday at BMO doesn't look as bad as it would have at the beginning of the season, the way United's playing. Now you get Michael Bradley back. You finally get to integrate him into the team for good, knowing he's not going to be going off. You got to feel pretty good if you're a TFC fan right now.
Yeah, I think so. And also, if you watch that game, they have the crowd back. You know, man, that used to be a place that you, back in my day, back when I was going to clubs, and I thought I was a lot cooler. That was a tough place. It was a volatile place. You know, it was kind of like what some of these Pacific Northwest road games feel like these days. I mean, you went there and you were glad to get out of there with a point.
Yep.
But once the record started becoming bad at home and the fans stopped showing up and there was that discontent, that's when it became a place where you circled it on the calendar and you say, all right, that's going to be a place where we can go get a result. And I think that's changing. I think obviously the personnel on the field is a little more intimidating, and having that crowd behind them makes it a tough place to go play. I also think Michael Bradley has a chip on his shoulder about the World Cup and a lot of people saying he didn't perform well. I think he wants to come back and really shush all his critics up by going and having a terrific end of the season with his club team and helping them do something they haven't been able to do for a long time and compete for an MLS Cup. So that's a team, especially when Defoe is playing consistently and looking hungry. That's a team that's going to be there till the end. I have no doubt that the Portland or that Toronto FC are a different team than they were in the past.
Last thing before I let you go, I asked Garth Lagerwey about the DeAndre Yedlin situation and how difficult it is as a GM in this kind of situation. I'll ask you about the Sporting Kansas City situation. Peter Vermees doing an awesome job, as he's done year in and year out, of keeping that team in contention, not just in contention, but towards the top, no matter who they have in the lineup, injuries, people leaving to go overseas and what have you. Now, though, to me, this could be his greatest challenge, because if you lose Matt Beisler and you maybe lose Graham Zuzi, is that something that even Peter Vermees can't recover from?
Well, it depends on what he does with the money he gets. I mean, that's a real question. I mean, are Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi replaceable? Absolutely not. But it depends on the business you do when you lose them. I mean, these are two bright stars for MLS. They're two players that are a absolute joy to watch, that are going to be an integral part of the U.S. team for the foreseeable future. So it's obviously the type of guys you don't want to lose from your roster, but depending on how much money they get in, if they can buy down the cap, if they can go make a big acquisition, I mean, that's something that ends up showing that the business nous of Peter Vermees and his staff to if indeed someone comes a knocking and the offer is too good to turn down, what can he do with that money? And we've seen teams in the past do a great job with that. We've seen teams in the past have it tear their team apart. So kind of remains to be seen. But the good thing for Peter Vermees is he's not too far off from those championship lights. So I'm sure, regardless of how it shakes out, he's going to have time to get it right.
Would you be surprised if Matt Beisler finished the MLS season in MLS?
No, I wouldn't be. I would think that there's someone coming, and there will be an offer for Matt Beisler, and I know there's already been offers for Matt Beisler, but I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes the rest of the club season. I mean, that's really what's gotten him all these opportunities. They're not going anywhere. If he plays with his club team, if he plays well and finishes off the season, those offers are still going to be there, and he can probably pick between a few great options.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think there's any shame or disrespect in calling a league a sellers or a sellers league, but are we now past the point, looking at Beisler's success in the World Cup, looking at Graham Zuzi's success in the World Cup, where you do automatically have to go if an offer is laid down for you?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at Michael Bradley and you look at Clint Dempsey, even though some of these guys are a little older, coming back to the league, no, you don't have to go. I mean, not only can you stay in the league, you can stay in the league and make big money, and you can also stay in the league and still play for your national team. And there were more MLS guys at this World Cup than in the previous two. So it's obvious that the route into the national team, which used to be one motivating factor, or the route into a bigger bank account,
yes,
which used to be another motivating factor, those are two things that aren't really on the table anymore. So it's kind of about the challenge for yourself. Do you have a bigger challenge than your club, and do you have, not guarantees because there are no guarantees, but do you have a good feeling that you're going to get a lot of burn, that you're going to get playing time? Because to go sign for a big club for big money but to be sitting on the bench, that's exactly what brought Michael Bradley back to MLS. I mean, it's no good for your development. It's no good for your enjoyment of the game just to say, hey, I play for Liverpool, but I'm sitting on the bench. He doesn't have to go. But the great part about it is, back in my day, you never re-signed your contract because the only way you got overseas was if you were a free,
yes,
agent, so to speak, if your contract had run out. But nowadays, it's to show what a market it is and to show what a selling and buying market MLS is, there's guys in the middle of deals, at the beginning of deals, that get bought up all the time. So it's great to see. I love to see that guys like Matt Beisler have these opportunities, and it's exciting to wait and find out what he decides to do with his future. Either way, I think he's a tremendous talent. It's going to be fun to watch him play for the the coming years.
Yeah, and I think that Omar Gonzalez is a great example of what you just talked about. You know, he's a key member of the national team setup. He's got a DP contract, so his bank account is his bank account. He's playing for Los Angeles Galaxy regularly. So I would guess that if somebody comes in with the argument of challenge yourself, he is challenging himself. This league is enough of a challenge, and he's getting everything else around it to go, I don't need to leave. In fact, I don't want to leave, so I'm not going to leave, rather than saying, well, the paychecks really get big, so I guess I have to go.
Yeah, and also, I don't understand why it's a cop-out to want to stay and build MLS. I mean, why is there no premium on that? Immediately, Landon Donovan and some of these guys that have dedicated their careers to Major League Soccer are looked at as guys that were too wussy to go and take on the challenge abroad. And why is it such a pessimistic attitude instead of saying, you know, what an amazing servant to a league that they say, I believe in this league, I want to see this league grow, I'm going to stay and help it do that. And you know, I think Omar and Landon are two examples of that. But there are many guys that say, you know what, this league's quality grows year by year. David Villa just played in Champions League final. Julio Cesar, who just played in a World Cup semifinal. I mean, there were players that are still playing at the very highest level you can possibly play at on the international stage that choose to play their trade in MLS. So, I mean, if we continue to look down on MLS and say you got to go overseas, anyone that stays here is copping out, anyone that stays here is not taking the challenge, I just think it's just a disservice not only to the league but to the truth of why some of these guys decide to stay.
And, you know, just – and I know I'm letting you go, but it also feels like on the other side of that coin, that Landon Donovan scoring record is looking more and more unbreakable or untouchable as the years go on. And you just feel like he's going to add to that number. And with the way people come in and the way people come out of the league, that could be a Barry Bonds-esque number.
Well, absolutely. And also it's something he's very proud about.
Yes.
And he should be. And it's something that it's cool to talk about in our league that it wasn't a situation where, yeah, this guy was on track to be one of the leading goal scorers all time for Major League Soccer, but, you know, he went over
exactly.
And sat on the bench for Bayern Munich for a couple of seasons. You know, it's just, I love the idea that some of our American players are good enough to play in some of the biggest clubs around the world. Nothing makes me happier than that, and I have no delusions that Major League Soccer is anywhere near some of the big clubs around the world and some of the top leagues around the world. But it's not going to get there if every single time we have a talented guy who's ready for the next level, he takes off for greener pastures.
Well, Kyle, it looks like our scantily clad server is making her way over with the check to our VIP area, which means I'm going to duck into the bathroom and then walk out and stiff you with the bill.
Put me on the list. Put me on the list.
So I thank you and enjoy the match this weekend in San Jose. And thanks for taking some time. I appreciate it.
Anytime, man.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.